The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
So we have Dr. Mohammed with us. Good afternoon, Dr. Mohammed. How are you?
Good afternoon. Good afternoon to all of our listeners. Tuned in for your lunchtime, Doctor. This is Dr. Sophia Mohammed on the phone. We're still, nevertheless, here to answer your questions.
All right, thanks so much, Doc. And of course, for our listeners, you can send us your questions on WhatsApp 306-1065 and your calls live 627-3223-625-2257. The lunchtime doctor's on. Doctor, we have a question already. Good day, Doctor. I fell down a few months ago and now I can bend my left knee. What could I do about it? So I think can't bend the left knee is what they're getting to. Can you give them some advice?
Okay. So what's been happening, what we do know for certain is that once there is a fall, then nerves may be damaged, muscles, bones, joints, tendons. If there's a damage or fracture to bone, then that will certainly inhibit any sort of mobility. A fall is not something to be underestimated. One, I will suggest, I do hope you can go and possibly get it x-rayed or at least be reviewed by a healthcare professional. Let's make sure you don't further any damage, especially to the knee and to the ankle. Now, Govin, let's see if the technical difficulties are being resolved. We can probably jump straight to a commercial because I believe the internet just reconnected here.
Yeah, hello, Doc. Good afternoon. Of course, welcome to the lunchtime, Doctor, folks, with the kind compliments of Super Farm. Of course, our numbers are 627-3223-625-2257 and 306-1065. Question here for the doctor, and we'll try to see if we get some questions from yesterday. Our doctor, is it bad? I know sometimes standing up and eating is bad, but is it bad to be walking and eating? Sometimes I have to walk and eat on my way to work.
So, other than the adrenaline that keeps pumping while we're walking and eating or standing and eating, no, there isn't any documented health deficit with that particular incident. Other than it, however, if one is stressed and eating, then certainly that may cause some symptoms.
Okay, Doc. Now, while we wait on some calls there, because you're on one of the lines there, right? So
yes.
If you're not getting through
Let's
to six...
Let's see if we can try back the Wi-Fi, because it just reconnected.
It just reconnected, okay. All right, so we'll take a... if we could come back, all right? You listen to the lunchtime, Doctor, with the kind of comments.
Oh, wow.
Super.
Can I help?
Yes. I'm looking for a multivitamin.
We have a wide range here at Superfarm. Let me get some more information so I can select the best vitamin for you.
See? That's the kind of advice I come for at Superfarm. Well, that and the snacks.
At Superfarm, we have the expertise and advice you count on. Superfarm, your prescription of trust.
All right, of course, we'll still listen to the Lunchtime Doctor, Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1, Vibe City 105 FM, and Sky 99.5 FM. All right, like I said, we'll try to get through to some of the questions from yesterday. If not, you sent a question yesterday, you did not ask it, feel free to send it to any one of our frequencies and they will forward it to us. Other than that, our WhatsApp numbers are 306-1065. Let's see if we do have the doctor back on the line. Hello?
Yes. So I do believe that we just reopened another line because I'm back here now on our Zoom connection. Mm-hmm. All in order there in the studio?
Yes. I'm hearing a bit distant, but it's better than nothing.
Huh? So we are actually here at the headquarters of the Diabetes Association of Trinidad and Tobago. To those who are our listeners would know, I hold quite a few hats. One of those hats is a technical advisor and the PRO of the work that we advocate right here at the Diabetes Association. And earlier on today, we had the opportunity of launching something called the Continuous Glucose Monitor, specifically gauged or directed towards the use of our type 1 diabetics where this is a sensor that one can place on the body that will continuously give you that reading without having to engage in multiple sticks. Today we launched the use of this particular sensor, and we do hope with corporate funding, with funding by private-public partnerships, we can make this accessible to all of our type 1 diabetics at no cost. But of course, it will take many hands together to make this happen.
All right, let's get a question here. Doctor, I had a C-section cut in my stomach many years ago. What would you recommend I use within the space? Thank you.
Now, for anyone who's had that particular cut or that particular surgical process called a C-section, yes, that can be one that is traumatizing. However, recovery is very possible. Now, when you say in the space, if you'd like to share a little bit more on exactly what, because you said you had it quite a few years ago, so give us an idea of exactly what's happening in that space. What we do know is that with that C-section cut, it is, and I want all of our listeners to understand, you're cutting through 7 layers from skin to adipose tissue, going into the uterine cavity, cutting through all of the myometrium, so cutting through the entire process. Then thereby, that needs time to heal. So while we talk about the 3 trimesters of pregnancy, we also like to engage on the 4th trimester, which is the healing of the mom, especially those who had C-sections. What we recommend is that in the first 6 weeks, besides from baby, you try not to be lifting anything heavy, even in your bending process. You try for the crib not to be in a lower level, elevated if possible. So you want to minimize that duress distress at the level of the abdomen. There are as well bio oils you can place on the skin to help ease the marks, if there are any marks. And of course, after the 6-week period, you can engage a physical therapist, your obstetrician, to guide, for them to guide you on when they can, you can return back to a space of getting into some exercise. All of that would help the healing process. Over to you, Bees.
Okay, another question. Let's see. Good day. I am experiencing a burning sensation when I pass urine and frequent urination. It started yesterday. What can that be? They didn't say whether it was a male or female.
So anytime there is that burning on passing urine, the first diagnosis that comes to mind that we want to rule out is a urinary tract infection. There most likely is some sort of UTI developing there. While we do get patients, our diabetic patients, who do experience that burning on passing urine, the first thing we want to rule out or test for is indeed if it's a UTI. If it is a UTI, antibiotics, and of course we want to ensure you are well hydrated. You also, I'm sure many of those our listeners have known that you add cranberry juice, any of the berry juice, because all of that helps in terms of, as they say in Trinidad, flushing out the kidneys.
Hi, doctor. They say to eat nuts, but how much and what kind should I eat? Thank you. That's a question I could ask. I should ask because I love nuts.
Yes, because we know you absolutely could live on nuts if you're given the chance, right? Now, while there are significant health benefits, proteins in particular, that you get from nuts, nuts do give you a fair amount of carbohydrates. So again, everything in portion size. Some nuts, if we're looking at almonds, have a lower glycemic index, and some, like cashew nuts, have a significantly higher glycemic index. If we are having nuts, of course, I would recommend choose the unsalted versions. In fact, just the addition of salt to one pack of nuts is very likely to send up to incur an increase in your blood pressure. What I would suggest to all, turn the pack of nuts around, look at your nutritious values, look at the amount of sugars, look at the amount of carbohydrates. and you yourself get into the habit of comparing. But am I not a-okay? What I would suggest is no more than, say, 10 to 12 almonds in a day. If it's a pack of nuts, then half a pack is considered a serving, not a full pack.
Half a pack? Oh, wow.
Yes, because most times, and again, if you were to turn it around, you will see the amount of sugars and carbohydrates in those nuts, okay. Those packs in particular.
All right, Dr. Point taken. 627-3223 or 625-2257. Hello, good afternoon. Getting a feedback there. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Yes, sir.
Continue doing a good job, Doc. What I would like to know, I just have a cup of coffee in the morning, milk tea and some crisps. How good is that for breakfast? It's within 2 hours and then after I have some oats and then some food. Just your opinion. Have a good day. Thanks again.
So great breakfast there. However, what I would suggest, what is recommended, and it's recommended by the nutritionist, it's recommended by lifestyle specialists, is that our first meal for the day should be, they say, eat like a king. We've gotten accustomed to rushing breakfast, eating very little at breakfast, and then we leave the very heavy meal for dinner. And really and truly, by dinner time, it's recommended, they say, eat like a king for breakfast, eat like a prince for lunch, and then eat like a beggar for dinner. Meaning your meal at dinner time should be considerably less in calorie intake. The breakfast meal should be more aligned to the amount of calories you would need to power you through for the day. Most persons, including myself, absolutely don't get that full meal at breakfast, but I do try to optimize my protein intake for breakfast. So that was a great breakfast. The only thing I would add is increase your protein intake and some fruit at the breakfast time. That will give you sufficient calories and proteins to take you through the day and not incur that feelings of hunger later on when the entire body's metabolism have obviously slowed down.
My cousin suffers from insomnia. So sometimes in the morning, she falls into a deep sleep. This morning was very terrifying for her husband because he could not wake her, right? The thing is, she said she heard him calling her and felt him shaking her, but was dreaming that was answering him. The poor man is anxious for a long time. This message is kind of very confusing.
That's okay. So what we do understand, thank you so much for messaging in. It may be that he's anxious seeing his loved one in that particular scenario, obviously is triggering and difficult to manage. Insomnia is not something to take lightly. One of the main causes of insomnia is obstructive sleep apnea, where the body does not get enough oxygen during that nighttime when one is supposed to go into that restful state. So what I would suggest for that loved one, please let us get a proper sleep evaluation. There are many either ENT physicians that will engage in the sleep evaluations. They're even sleep specialists. Yes, right here in Trinidad as well. However, more in the private sector. So what I would suggest is at least have the conversation with your healthcare professional, and then you certainly can move those next steps forward. Now, answering the first question about nuts, I just pulled up something very specific that I think would be quite interesting for all of our listeners, including you, Basa. We talked about the glycemic index. Let me try to explain what is glycemic index to everyone. Glycemic index is the sugar response in our body when we eat something based on the amount of glucose in that particular item. So we have mentioned it when we talked about watermelon versus bananas, saying that watermelon has a higher glycemic index than obviously bananas. So while watermelons are considered healthy for diabetics, we tend to avoid or limit the amount. So the glycemic index, and I did mention that almonds are indeed one of your healthier choices versus even cashews or peanuts. Glycemic index for almonds, 11. Glycemic index for cashews, 29. Glycemic index for peanuts, 40. So when I said half a pack of peanuts, now you understand. While it does give you that energy is indeed a high amount of carbohydrates. So a high amount of sugars in particular. So for our diabetics, we tend to not recommend or encourage too much peanuts. The healthier nuts, according to this glycemic index chart, is indeed, we mentioned almonds, pecans, the glycemic index there is 9, macadamia nuts, the glycemic index is 4, and Brazil nuts, the glycemic index is 3, along with pumpkin seed, chia seed. Those, the glycemic index is 2. So while nuts are something that we have, probably some persons might have nuts almost every day, there is a significant amount of sugars, carbohydrates. So I encourage you to turn the pack to the back and look at those numbers.
All right, folks, once again, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor with the kind compliments of Super Farm. 627-3223-625-2257 and your WhatsApp messages 306-1065. And when you're sending in your WhatsApp messages, folks, you know, take your time and send your message so we can read them clearly. Afternoon, Doc. I was diagnosed with diabetes and about 2 months ago, from my knees to ankles, started burning during the night. Can you tell me the cause?
When I hear these things, it really, really continues to trouble my heart because it reminds me of how much work we still have to do for diabetic patients. When we hear or when we experience that burning, that feeling of warmth on the legs or the tingling or the further subset, the numbness, all of that is neuropathy, damaged nerves, damaged nerve end fibers. When there's too much glucose, sugar, circulating throughout the body, what it does is the nerve fibers, the sheets of the nerves, are actually becoming damaged. And the thing about neuropathy is that once those nerves are damaged, they are no longer functional. They cannot even be repaired. That damage is not reversible. And I want us all, this is why we continue to advocate for diabetes awareness, diabetes screening. The earlier we pick these values up and you know whether you're pre-diabetic, diabetic, what your control is at, then we can prevent some of these complications. What we see across our patients is diabetic neuropathy, and that may lead to complete numbness where one does not even feel or have sensation, so there can be loss of sensation. To the person who messaged in, please have that conversation with your healthcare professional so that you can indeed ensure your numbers are within good, strict control. And of course, you can also make sure, just as we keep talking about, proper nutrition, see if you can get a little bit of exercise. Just start with 5 minutes a day. What's recommended, obviously, is at least 30 minutes three times a day. So that's 90 minutes in 1 week. 15 minutes one day, half an hour another day. Get some level of exercise where your heart rate is going into the aerobic zone, so you're getting to burn some of that extra glucose circulating. Hope that answers the question.
All right, this is pertaining to the person with the same C-section. When they said space, they were talking about spaces under the stomach. Right, they say they sweat a lot in the space, a bit of a sense sometimes. Should they use talc powder? And it's over 30 years. Wow, 30 years.
Okay, I think I have a very good understanding of what is happening. So what may have happened is after section, then there tends to be not enough physical therapy. So there may be some adipose tissue deposition. So we call that central obesity. And around the tummy, that get that fat area starts to grow a little bit more than usual. So there may be folds developing. So when she said just about by the stomach, I presume she means the skin around that stomach area. Yes, when there is an odor within the folds, there's a possibility of a fungal infection. So what I would advise is, one, just proper hygiene. You also want to ensure that the area is not sweating, because now you're allowing or creating a petri dish for fungal infection. You can even use deodorant in those folds. Again, what is recommended is let a healthcare professional assess, just in case there is a skin fungal infection and more dramatic treatment is necessary. While the talc powder will certainly counteract the aspect of sweating, if there is a skin infection, the talc powder may just worsen it. So I hope that answers the question, and I encourage you, take that one step further and go get it checked out.
All right, here's another question about nuts. Another nuts fanatic. Hi, Doc, I like to eat walnuts. Is that okay?
So walnuts. Yes, as we just shared, we talked about the glycemic index. So we mentioned almonds, which is 11. The glycemic index of walnuts is about 12. So it's about the same with your almonds. It's in the healthy area. However, please, everything in moderation. Please don't go and say, Dr. Saf say walnuts are healthy, and then you're having it every single day. Everything in moderation, because sometimes those walnuts are served with a lot of salt, and you might be filling one need and causing another problem. But if you have to, if you really are a nuts fanatic and you would like to engage in or indulge in, choose your almonds, your pecans, your walnuts. Stay away from the cashews, or if you're having your cashews and your normal peanuts, smaller sizes. Hope that answers the question.
Right, the small sizes. Because when you say like half a pack, it can't be from the small itty-bitty sizes, half of that, because that's already small.
Well, here's again, I don't have a pack in front of me, but I'm going to get one and check the exact nutritional value. Sometimes we just need to turn it around and you'll see the amount of sugars. I don't have one in front of me, but what I can tell you is, what is your total sugar requirement for the day? Total sugar requirement for an entire day for females is 24 grams based on body size. Total sugar requirement for males, it ranges just about 30 grams, 33 if we're pushing it a little bit. That's about 4 teaspoons for males, for females, 6 teaspoons for males. Some of those packs can incur as high as one pack, just one pack, can have as high as 24, 23 grams of sugar. So in one pack of peanuts, you're knocking out your total sugar requirement for the day. Keep in mind that you may have other meals that will contribute sugars throughout the day. So yes, I am referring to those itsy bitsy packs.
Oh, Doc. All right, okay, 627-3223. 625-2257. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor with the kind compliments of Superfarm. And of course, WhatsApp messages coming in at 306-1065. Let's take a call. Hello, good afternoon. Turn on your radio, please. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, turn on your radio, please, sir. Nice. All right, go ahead.
Good afternoon, Doctor. Is she hearing me?
Yes, we certainly are. You're live on air.
Okay. The message concerning the very deep sleep that was terrifying this morning, it was long and detailed, because we wanted everything to be understood. So I did not get what you said about the specialist. Where would you find the specialist?
Sure. Thank you so very much for giving us a little bit more explanation there. keep in mind, this is a preliminary advice. This is not a full-on consultation. And I want all of our listeners to know that. I would love for us to move the conversation here into the space of a medical consultation. So anyone who have insomnia or any sort of sleep disorder, what we recommend is an ENT, an ear, nose, and throat specialist. There are also sleep specialists available. They're in the private sector. I'm not at liberty to call the individual private sectors, but your healthcare professional will certainly be familiar with it, and they will be able to take that next step. There's also, what we do is we do a CPAP test, where we would connect the person to, while they're sleeping, a 24-hour CPAP test while they're sleeping, and we actually look at their sleep monitor. So all of these things are available. You can move that conversation with your healthcare professional. I'm pretty certain they are well informed.
All right, how often, how often should I do an RFT? How often should one do an RFT?
It's a great question. What is an RFT? The renal function test, or that looks at the efficiency of the kidneys. Now, our kidneys tend to be the toxic plants of the body, where all the metabolites that we would intake, all the extras within the blood, goes in to become processed. It either filtrates out through the urine or passes onwards towards the rest of the body. How often is a kidney function test necessary? It really depends on what your circumstance is. If one is healthy, as in no or not any non-communicable diseases, one, I would suggest once a year. If, however, there is the condition of diabetes there, then we certainly would want further testing, possibly every 6 months. If you are a patient on diuretics, as in on Lasix in particular, if you're a patient on anyone, the angiotensin enzymes, then you would want, so it's those angiotensin inhibitors, you'd want to ensure a little bit more frequent. So it depends on if you're on medications. Your healthcare professional will guide how frequent that RFTs will be. Our patients who are on dialysis, sometimes we do their RFTs every week. They'll have it pre-dialysis, post-dialysis. So it really depends on the condition of the patient. Hope that answers the question.
All right, good day, doctor. Let's take this call here. Hello, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon. Afternoon to the doctor. I have a question. Some months ago, you said, when somebody is a diabetic, they cannot go back into the normal state. I asked that question to you, and you said no. I mean, you said yes. Yeah. But, for example, in 2016, the person had 6.6 of HbA1c. And last year, it reduced to 6.2. Would you classify the 6.2 as pre-diabetic? Thank you.
Excellent question. Now let us make sure we get these concepts clear. 6.6 HbA1c is within that range of considering being a diabetic, because we've looked at, and they are the international guidelines, while it was at 6.8, it has been becoming reduced. And why? They're putting tighter control. And yes, that 6.8 and 6.7 and 6.6, just that 0.1 makes a significant difference. But keep in mind, this is an average of your glucose monitoring in a 3-month time frame. Once a person has been diagnosed as diabetic, even if the HbA1c goes to lower, which is the 6.2, 5.8, etc., that does not mean you are no longer diabetic. That just means you have a very tight control. Whatever habits you're doing is working well. And that's what I want you all to understand. We have a population here that when they feel well, they stop taking their medications. When they feel that they've gotten a good reading, it means, okay, all is well, and they stop taking the medications. And then 2 or 3 days later, unfortunately, we have spikes or even the possibility of comas. So let's make sure we have a good understanding. If your reading is at 6.2, that is excellent. But we want you to continue the measures, continue maintaining that tight control, continue watching what you're eating, and of course, your hydration and exercise.
All right, Doc, how safe is it to use Rosuvastatin?
Yeah, that's okay, yeah.
And metformin.
Great. So those two medications are what we consider mainstream recommendations. We tend to utilize that quite often. Either it's the atorvastatin, which is indeed one of our cholesterol-lowering medications that we recommend. I don't believe it's on the CDAP system, however. That one would be one you may need to purchase. And of course, the furosemide or metformin, that certainly is on your CDAP. How safe it is? That is one medication for cholesterol lowering, one medication for managing your sugar levels. We use metformin or furosemide, glucophage is indeed used for our diabetic patients and even our polycystic ovarian syndrome patients. We've even used metformin in our pregnancy patients. That's how safe it is. So the combination of both of them, yes, it is indeed safe.
All right, folks, 627-3223-625-2257. We're inside the final lunchtime doctor for the week. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Doc. I'm glad you gave me that last bit of information there, because when I feel better, I tend to stay off the metformin. So now that I have to stay on it even when I feel better, that's the safest and best thing to do. So thanks for that information. Continue to do a wonderful job, and we do appreciate it.
So thank you so much for calling. Now, let's just talk a little bit about this particular medication. Open disclosure, and I've shared this before right here with each of you all. In, say, about 15 years ago, I myself had a diagnosis of polycystic ovarian syndrome. And while it was not in the diabetic phase, it certainly was in that pre-diabetic phase. Metformin is what was prescribed, and it can be a tablet that does not have a nice taste on the taste buds. There is the enteric coated version that removes that aluminum type feeling or taste you have as an aftertaste. So while I also been on the side as a patient, so I understand there were days when even getting accustomed to taking it, because when you take your metformin, your body does go through a hypoglycemic phase. So it's crucially important that you're eating first and then taking the medication, or even if you take the medication, you eat within that 10 to 15 minute time frame. So the medication has something to work on in your body. Most patients, I understand the compliance factor with metformin. It is not the nicest tasting tablet. So that's why if you can get the enteric coated versions, you will definitely improve your compliance.
All right, let's take another call. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor. Hello.
Yeah, good afternoon. Good day. My blood sugar was 90 this morning. Is it low?
Thank you so much for letting us know. That is an excellent value. 90 milligrams per deciliter is considered well within normal ranges.
Okay, let's get another call. Hello. Oh, lost that one there. 627-3223. Let's go back to the WhatsApps. Good afternoon, doctor. Every time I put on my shoe, my feet feels like needles in them. It also has a burning only in the sole of my feet. My shoes are not tight, but once it's an enclosed shoe.
So all of those things are indeed signs and symptoms of a neuropathy. One may feel the burning. One may feel the pins and needles, that tingling sensation. One may feel prickling feeling on the soles of their feet. It may even go to numbness. All of that means the nerves, the end of the nerves, are becoming damaged. I do hope if you are going to be checked for diabetes, just as we've been discussing here, because there is that phenomenon of diabetic neuropathy. And please also get your high blood pressure checked, because there is that phenomenon of hypertensive neuropathy. Now, those are the two more common things that causes neuropathy. It may even be a neuromuscular injury from previous, or it may be a current acute injury. So there are a host of things that can cause that neuropathy. It's important you get it checked out sooner rather than later.
Let's get this call. Hello, good afternoon. Oh, lost that one again. 627-3223. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Doc, when somebody's belching, when they're drinking hot tea or even after or before, what that is?
So I'm glad you brought that up. Anytime there is that explosion or release of air, that pretty much means that it was either trapped within the stomach or, as we call it right here, it's burping, gas, belching. That's pretty normal, because what may happen as we talk, as we chew gum even, you're swallowing air. The air goes within the esophagus, within the digestive tract, and it may reside in different pockets. The warm tea, anything warm, means it's now going to fill into that space of the gut. And the gut is like a long tunnel, from starting from the mouth, going all the way down to the perianal canal. So obviously, as one fills in the tunnel with the warm tea, then it's going to shift that gaseous explosions out. And it comes out as gas or burping and belching. Nothing is wrong with that. However, here's when it becomes problematic. When, in addition to that belching, you're bringing up or you're feeling a bitter taste in the back of your throat. That may be gastric juices from the stomach. That may mean there is some reflux. And of course, we've discussed that right here in terms of busy professionals who may not get to have proper meals or that frequent meals throughout the day, and unfortunately suffer with GERD. So belching, I'm not concerned or overly too worried about it. If there's associated reflux, that's when I become definitely something called red flag. Hope that answers your question.
All right, Doc. I put in 2 stents in May, and now my feet are swelling.
So let's talk about what a stent is, because most person may not know. I'm presuming that stent is in the arteries within the heart, so within the carotid arteries. The coronary arteries of the heart. You can also put stents in the brain. That's within the carotid arteries. So I'm not too sure where exactly the stents are. And yes, it can impact upon the body. But if it is indeed in the heart, that means there may have been some sort of cholesterol deposits, as in a plug, a thrombosis, an embolus, anything that would have blocked the pathway of flow. And I'm hoping it was not a heart attack. If it was, that means the heart has indeed been compromised. So what we look at is ejection fraction. So we look at the functioning of the heart. And why is that important? Because if the heart is not functioning properly, then the fluid flow, the circulatory composition from the heart down to the rest of the body, to the limbs, and back up again will be affected. And that's why there will be accumulation of fluid around the ankles. Anyone who's had a heart attack is now at risk of something called left-sided heart failure, where while the heart normally pumps blood all throughout, getting the blood or the circulatory factors from the ankles, from the lower limbs, back up to the heart, there can be some constrictions or impedance to flow. This is why, one, we recommend that most patients who has had a heart attack is also on a fluid-releasing medication. Most times it tends to be furosemide, Lasix, a diuretic to help reduce the amount of fluid in the body so there isn't a fluid accumulation. Two, we must manage the high blood pressure. If the high blood pressure is not well managed, then there will be that accumulation of fluids in the ankle. We also must manage risk of peripheral artery disease, where that same cholesterol plug that plugged the heart arteries can also plug the veins, can plug the arteries of the lower limbs. All of that. Think of pipes. Think of sludge or moss in the pipes, and it's blocking flow. That's what will cause the accumulation of fluid around the ankles. Hope that answers your question.
All right, we just have about 8 minutes away from 1 o'clock. Let's see how many calls we could slip in there. 627-3223-625-2257. Of course, the lunchtime doctor with the kind compliments of Super Farm. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Doc. Doc, at night sometimes I get an electric shock in my head. Like, the electric shock. Don't know what's happening.
Hold on the line. Are you still here?
Hello?
Yes. Can you repeat what you said there?
Sometimes in the night when I'm sleeping, I get like an electric shock in the head. Like a zzzz. You know, electric shock in the head.
Okay, so we heard you now. So I presume what you are suggesting is that while you are sleeping, that you're feeling almost like a pins and needles within the scalp itself. That certainly will require quite some investigations. One, we'll want to know what other medical concerns you have, if it's also related to diabetes. Because yes, just like there's neuropathy in the lower limbs, there can be neuropathy in the parts of the skull because there's also skin there. But that also sounds, because it's while you're sleeping, that it may be something related to the sleep pathways. And this is where we definitely, one, will need to do a few more questions, and two, what we consider, one, the investigations in looking at the electrical conductivity of the brain, it's an EEG. So it's ECG for the heart and an EEG for the brain, which is electroencephalogram. Very different from the ECG, which is electrocardiogram for the brain, but similar in that what we're looking at is the electrical conductivity of the brain. What we'd want is you make sure you take that next step, visit your healthcare professional, and they may require that EEG. It certainly will help guide us on what you are experiencing.
All right, Doc, good day. I am diabetic, took an ultrasound, and my kidney is swelling and has a cyst. What can I do about it?
Again, it always breaks my heart when we hear about diabetic patients with complications involving the kidney. There are, first and foremost, let me reassure you and give you some hope. There are many things that can be done. Right now, we're at the Diabetic Association, and you can jump onto any one of their social media sites, social media platforms, or we have the website as well. I'll get the number just now for you and announce it here on the program. You can call the association, where there's a fair amount of support available for all of the members of our diabetic community. What is necessary in your case is, one, making sure you're staying consistent with the medications. because once the kidney starts to get affected, then there isn't a reversal. There isn't any, the kidneys are already damaged, and we wouldn't want you to reach the point where you'd have to get dialysis. It's important you not only take the medications, but you also place on a salt-restricted diet. So it's not only restricting glucose now, it's also restricting salt. Hydration is key, and that holistic management, managing your stress levels, exercise, and of course, making sure you're consistent with the medication. Hope that answers your questions.
All right, let's see if we could take one more call quickly. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. For example, the topics you all are discussing are very interesting.
Can you turn on your radio, miss? We got enough feedback. We could hardly hear you. Turn on
sure,
your radio.
Hold on.
You can try now. Let's see if you're hearing you.
We need to turn on. No, too much noise, miss. Too much noise. Okay. Too much noise there. All right, the final question. Doctor, from your experience, how long does a wrist tendonitis takes to heal?
So that wrist tendonitis is definitely directed by how often you are using it. Which means if you're at your computer typing every day, that tendonitis is going to take much longer. Part of the healing process is resting. You must have it in some sort of compression or wrap, and of course the anti-inflammatories. It depends on if there's muscular injury, tendon injury, or if it's a previous fracture. So it really depends on what was the trigger for it. It can heal in as quick as 3 weeks, but if there's that continuous aggravation of it, then you're going to delay the healing process.
All right, final one. Good afternoon, doctor. What is your advice on Metamucil for type 2 diabetic?
Right. So Metamucil, I think they're mentioning there, what we tend to always look at is the combination of medication. What the patient is on, what are the complications? So that specific one, I won't be able to just give advice because I don't know what all of your medical spectrum is in terms of your medical care. It's always important that we treat the entire patient, not one result and not one type of medication. I know that may sound a little stern, but it is the holistic advice that we give all our patients.
All right, Doug, well, that's it. We can wrap up for this week.
So that pretty much brings us to the third show, the third installment for this week. And it has been quite an interesting week. We've had callers from Miami, messages from Toronto, and callers all across Trinidad and Tobago. My heartfelt appreciation to Superfarm, our sponsor at present, everyone of the TBC team that makes this program happen, and of course, you all, our cherished listeners that tune in, that send your questions, that share it to your loved ones. We want to encourage you to continue to live healthy, live well, live purposeful. And for tomorrow, happy Independence Day to everyone. Be safe to all of the parents and our youngsters who like to indulge with fireworks. Please be safe. Please be mindful of our four-legged friends, because fireworks and their eardrums are not friends. Even our elderly, that increase in noise can be a little disruptive. So please be safe, be mindful, and join us again next week for your Lunchtime Doctor. Thank you so much for all of your time today. Signing off, base will continue on Freedom. This is Dr. Safiya Mohammed.
All right, thank you there, Doc, and do enjoy the rest of your week and your weekend. All right, you've been listening, folks, to the Lunchtime Doctor right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1, Sky 99.5, and Vibe City 105 FM with the kind compliments of Superfarm. Do continue to enjoy the rest of your day.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.